Good morning. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Ebony K. Williams in for Jenna Wolf. That is Hall of Famer Chris Carter and Mr. Nick Wright. Good morning, fellas.
Oh, I know what you're doing. Oh, it's the new, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ebony, but it's the new Slim Fit Chris Carter. Yeah, he is, I believe, 7 pounds away from peak playing weight condition. And so now all of a sudden, start of a show, he's doing a little one of these. Little, let me see if the suit still
I'm
fits.
Like Nick's daughter. I'm what? Bashful, but I really talk all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly well, right. Like, you look great, Mr. Carter.
0%
thank you. Body
I love
fat.
The color of that. Reminds it. Me beautiful. Of a little Syracuse orange. Well done, Ms. Williams.
No, it also it looks
you.
Good on you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I'm not really with that Cuse in the ACC, but we're not going to talk about that
Carolina.
This morning. We are going
to
start
New Jordans to sell, by
with
the way.
Tom Brady, Shay, right there. Tom Brady turned 41 years old on Friday, but so far, of course, his age has not stopped him from dominating the NFL. Pro Football Focus has him ranked number one QB in football. Brady is coming off an MVP season where he threw 32 touchdowns to only 8 interceptions. CeCe, how in the world is this possible? How is Tom Brady able to be at the top of his game at 41 years old?
I'm going to try to give people maybe a few reasons why, but a lot of it, I got to tell you, I don't know. Like we're not supposed to be on TV talking about subjects and be like, I don't know. Well, in this one, as far as Tom Brady and what he's doing, it's because
it's unprecedented.
There's nothing in history
you can pull to and say he's doing what this guy did because he is blazing new ground every game he plays as far as at that level at this age.
Right. But one thing that I'm not going to do is I'm not going to start with Tom Brady and his commitment to the game as far as taking care of his body. I know players that have played with Tom Brady, and they say it's just like having a coach on the field as far as the meetings. Tom Brady is running the meeting, installing parts of the offense, explaining the small little details of technique that typically even the quarterbacks don't get into. How many steps you're going to take, what's your head position, all these things. So his overall love for the game, that's the only way you can play a long time, especially unless you're a kicker, where you're not necessarily kicking or involved in all the team, the mundane things with the team. When you are a quarterback, man, you are the central focus of an organization on and off the field. So his ability to still have fun playing the game. We heard from Andrew Luck yesterday. Andrew Luck said, no, I didn't think I wasn't going to play football again, but I didn't know if I was going to have fun playing football. So when you've accomplished as much as Tom Brady has and still get the joy to get up and to go to work, and on a Wednesday, be excited. Training camp number 19, 20, to be excited. Those things are impossible to do. But that combination and being in an environment where Bill Belichick will not let you rest. And that marriage, what other people might look at as chaotic, is harmony and successful. And I believe that Tom's love of football has grown being around Bill and Bill's pursuit of perfection on a daily basis. And I think that they have really helped push and pull each other to where they are.
And when Chris says it's unprecedented, we can't pull anything from it, any examples, it's not just that he's playing at a high level at this late age. He just completed, or maybe is in the midst of, depending on what he does this year, the greatest stretch statistically of his career. The last 3 years are the best stats he's ever had. That's his age 38, 39, and 40 season. Over the last 3 years, he averages a 105 rating, 32 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, while averaging, as if you want to do the quarterback wins thing, over 12 wins per season. So, like, how can that be possible? My best answer is this. Tom Brady's 4.340 is his brain. And the one thing that does not deteriorate as an athlete with age, it actually gets sharper for some with age, is your mental acuity. What did he say to you, Chris? Why would I stop taking the test when I have all the answers? So when he's never been a guy who's beaten you with raw athleticism. He's never even been a guy who's beaten you because he has the greatest arm talent. He's been a guy that has learned the game as well as anyone we've seen and has developed on an upward curve as well as anyone we've seen. It almost makes sense that until his body betrays him to where he can't play, that the mental side of the game has gotten easier for him, not harder.
But this is the struggle that most people, when they get beyond 35 years of age, playing the major sports, it's that my brain, yes, is working at the highest level it's worked at, but I can't get my body in position to do what my brain actually sees. So you can give Tom Brady's brain part credit, but his ability to embrace physical training and the nuances to looking at doing things a different way, because he is not a good athlete. But he has managed to turn himself into one of the greatest athletes ever, playing an athletic sport. So, yes, I give his brain credit. But for Tom, if he wasn't doing the type of training that he was doing, if he wasn't sacrificing his body as far as what he was going to eat, finding out how he was going to be able to produce fuel, all those things set the table for, in clutch situation, this dude is second to none. So that's one thing that's keeps driving him, because I'm so good when the game is at its most stressful, when it's at its peak, that being in the playoffs, that being third downs, that being fourth quarters, Tom Brady is brilliant at doing that. So I think that right there, that ability to be able to continue to do that has kept him younger in his body than his actual age is.
And speaking of his body, CeCe, it's interesting because we all remember a couple weeks ago we saw that beach selfie of Tom and yes. Giselle on the beach. And a lot of people, myself included, were a little surprised to see Tom Brady in that physical shape. I think some of us thought he might have had a six-pack or something going on underneath there. But it's so true that he does do something very special for his body. It doesn't necessarily reflect what most of us think as athleticism or what that tip-top body looks like. But it works for him. No questions asked. You got five rings to show for it.
Well, the thing about football is when you go through an NFL locker room, there's a certain sector of people that they better have a six-pack. Mm-hmm. They better have a six-pack on top of a six-pack. Right. They need shoulders. They need biceps. But Tom has mastered the ability of strength and flexibility. Mm-hmm. And playing quarterback, he has been able to endure the punishes of staying in the pocket. And he's gotten better athletically. And quarterback is one of the few positions that you can do this with. Like all that training, playing wide receiver and running back, it will help you, but it only help you a certain amount because you have to put on muscle mass to be able to survive.
He almost looks pliable.
That's a great word for it, because I was listening to interview, and I wish I remembered the former player's name, but when we were at the height of talking about Guerrero and the pliability and the Brady training, and he said, listen, I will just tell you period, point blank, it was a defensive end. Hitting Tom Brady feels different than hitting other quarterbacks. And he couldn't explain why. He just said the way other guys seem more rigid. And when I hit Brady, he seems to just absorb, like I absorb into him. So whatever he's doing pliability-wise has clearly been effective. But one of the themes, we're almost at a one-year mark of this show. One of the themes when we talk about football is Chris repeatedly reminding us that there is the rare 1% of football players that aren't system players, but everybody else, including a lot of all-time greats, mm-hmm. are system guys. And that brings us back to Belichick. And that is where it has been, obviously, the perfect marriage. Because, yes, Belichick was not Bill Belichick until he got Tom Brady, but Tom Brady was Tom Brady in name only when he got to Bill Belichick and has since then evolved into this guy. And when you mention how calm he is in the height of the storm, part of that is because I believe his first year in the league, he gets to play in a Super Bowl. His third and fourth years in the league, he gets to play in a Super Bowl. It wasn't until year four that he was a big driving engine of those teams making mm-hmm. the Super Bowl. Year one, he had one touchdown the entire playoff run. So when you are, I use the Kobe example. Kobe's first championship, he was still a young player. He wasn't a great player mm-hmm. yet. But he was with Shaq. He got the experience, so it wasn't a nerve-wracking situation later in his career when he's in those moments. Brady had that benefit of being in the Belichick system and then exceeded anyone's wildest expectations within it.
Yeah, people who are married understand this. Typically, at the height of your career, you'll be able to attach that success with your home life and being happy. And I can't continue to give Tom Brady credit, Belichick credit, with not understanding being in that light, not like Tom Brady, but being a professional athlete, how Giselle must have done a tremendous job, you know, and her relationship being able to balance, being married to Tom Brady, what they're going to do privately and what they're going to do publicly. And also the other marriage, the marriage that he has with the Kraft family and the New England fan base. Tom Brady loves being a Patriot. He loves playing for Kraft. So those two marriages, his home life, because most people will tell you, man, at the height of my career, I look back at it, yeah, man, I had some things in order at home that really, really helped me and led to me being successful. And then also, sometimes it's the name on the front is deemed even more important than the name on the back, and that's who you're representing. That's the Kraft and Patriot Nation, which has been a tremendous, because Kraft, when he was a Patriot fan growing up, they were losers. Yeah. Since he's taken over the team, they've been winners.
It is certainly working for all involved. Coming up next, are the Cowboys wide receivers actually underrated? I know we've been giving them a lot of stuff about it. We'll talk about it next on First Things First. We're going to move on to the Dallas Cowboys. Pro Football Focus ranked their wide receiver core 29th in the NFL, but don't tell that to Cole Beasley. Former Cowboys great Michael Irvin said, quote, Cole Beasley told me that the Cowboys wide receivers will shock people. Okay. CeCe, are the Cowboys wideouts being underrated here?
Underrated? I mean, why should they have a high rating?
He got to be shady.
I mean, this is the thing, because I really try to give him credit. And I'm really trying to listen to Cole Beasley, because we're getting
a lot. I mean, he's got a big speaking role this year, evidently.
Yeah, I mean, this is seventh year in the league.
Seventh year.
Yeah, like surprising people like wouldn't know that. Like he's been around for he's no young football player. Huh. Like, has he ever started a game?
Has he ever started a game
in the NFL?
I mean,
a lot of teams are starting three guys.
Yeah,
it's your sixth year in the league. You typically would have started some games by now.
That's fair.
So that's fair. The rating for the Cowboys wide receivers are appropriate for who they are. All right, because wide receiving groups are like, and Nick and I have discussed this a lot. It's like a basketball team, all right? If you're going to have a group, because you need a center. Now, we got small ball now, so you can have a small five. Mm-hmm. So everyone can't have a Gronk and everything, right. But it'd be nice to have a Gronk. Like, you need a table setter, someone you can throw the ball into. They can generate first downs. Okay, they don't have that.
Mr. Reliable.
All right, yeah, so if you don't have a center, now we need a point guard. Mm-hmm. Like, who is their point guard? So I would say Cole Beasley might be their point.
And when CeCe says like a basketball team, just think about it size-wise. Like, you want you and guys that complement each other. So your shooting guard might
skills,
be your speed guy.
Size, yes. And shape and speed. So exactly. You like to be able to diversify that. But ultimately, you need either a big person that can be dominant, or you need someone on the wing that can score and get buckets. Now, they don't have that. Allen Hurns is the only receiver in their careers that had 1,000-yard season. So I would say Allen Hurns might be underrated. Cole Beasley is a slot receiver. He's going to be a product of the system, all right? His yard per catch is going to be anywhere from 7.5 yards a catch to 11 yards a catch. His touchdowns, he's not going to score many touchdowns. When you watch video of Cole Beasley, you will see him short area quickness. You'll see him getting open, but immediately you will see him getting tackled, yes, going to the ground. So who's going to get them yards after the catch? You know, to me, they have to spread it around. Terrence Williams, he's got to become the ultimate deep threat for the Cowboys, because they have to run a lot of play action. But for me, Allen Hurns is the guy. Okay. If he doesn't have 1,100 yards this year, it's going to be hard for the Cowboys in their wide receiving core with not a proven tight end on the roster. It's going to be hard. So, no, they're rated exactly where they should be.
And listen, the word underrated, overrated, sometimes people misunderstand what they mean. Like, something can be great, yet still overrated. I'll take an example from the musical world. Might make some people angry. The Beatles, they were great. They might be overrated, given the fact that everyone says they're the greatest musical group ever. Something can be mediocre, yet be underrated. I'll go to the sports world. I think Andy Dalton fits that bill. Like, Andy Dalton gets treated as if he's a terrible quarterback. He's an okay quarterback, so I think he's a little underrated. But sometimes things are properly rated. And that's the Dallas Cowboys wide receivers. They are looked at as a group that's bottom five in the league, and they are bottom five in the league. If you are in a position where your best hope and arguably your only hope for a 1,000-yard receiver is Allen Hurns, well, then you're properly rated. You mentioned Terrence Williams. Now, I think he could be key to them in this regard. We saw early in his career, he was the big play guy. That was, he was 17 yards a catch, over 16 yards a catch each of his first 3 years. And then something happened the last few years. He went to 13, down to 10. Now, I know that's when the quarterback change happened, but I don't know that we can lay that totally at Dak's feet. I don't know if they're using him properly, but he does have the ability for explosive plays. And we've talked a ton about it is so hard in this league if you're saying, I'm going to have a 12-play, 80-yard drive. I'm going to have 11-play, 80-yard drive.
Yes.
That you need to be able to have a 6-play, 80-yard drive. And so how do you do that? With some explosive plays. We know Beasley's not going to create those. Like, best case scenario for Beasley is, in a 3rd and 5, can he get you 7 yards? Like, can he be a reliable slot receiver in this league, which is what he's been at his best. Dak's first year is when he was probably statistically his best. But the rest of the guys, Tavon Austin, he's just a project who was a high draft pick, who has never yet found himself a real place in this league. Deontay Thompson, there's a reason he's been on now, I believe it is, 4th different team.
Yes, I've been watching Deontay since high school.
Okay.
Right? He played football in South Florida and also played for Urban Meyer's in that prolific offense that they had with Tebow, Percy Harvin, Hernandez, Murphy, Lewis Murphy, all those pros on that, all right? So he's been a role player. Right.
Everywhere he's gone.
Yes.
Everywhere he's gone, he's been a 4th or 5th wide receiver. And so sometimes things are just what they appear to be.
Right.
And I can't make an argument here that the Cowboys wide receivers are getting an unfair shake. I just can't. Like, I'd love to, but there's not one to be made. Now, they can prove us wrong, but I can't make that argument.
Cece, let me ask you this real quick. Would you rank them higher or have a better opinion of this wideout group if Dez was still with them?
Absolutely. Because Dez has proven himself to a certain point. Now, if Dez was still with the Cowboys and he was saying the same things that he has said this offseason, he's working harder than he's ever worked. He's working on some fundamentals. He's learning how to do certain things. I mean, these are the things I've been saying about Dez the last 3 years. Like, I wish it could have worked out, but a lot of times you need that shock to your system, and that was Dallas not offering him a contract, not inviting him to come back, even at a reduced salary. So, yes, I would feel more comfortable because I think between Terrence Williams and Tavon Austin, they could create the deep threat with Dez being the possession guy and a proven red zone.
And then you have more of that basketball team makeup. You know what I mean? You know who your power forward is. We'll see if Tavon can be the point. Like, you, then it makes more sense. You don't have the clear one. And that means if your 2's got to be your 1, then your 3's got to be your 2. Everyone's playing a little up for their skill
set. So one thing they have more of this year than they've had in the last couple years is they have more speed.
Yes.
Now, if the coaching staff can be able to utilize that speed, now people not looking at their speed, that might be underrated. Cole Beasley's rap career, that might be underrated, but them as a group, it's proper.
They are what they are. All right. Coming up, how did Randy Moss make the great Bill Belichick a better coach? We'll hear from Belichick's own mouth next on First Things First. You know. Time now for some stories to start your morning. This is brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Jacksonville Jaguars defensive tackle Malik Jackson says Jacksonville players are in awe of all-pro corner Jalen Ramsey. In awe. Chris Carter, how much of a difference maker is Ramsey?
He's right now. Malik Jackson, too, I followed his career. He's a physical player. He's not one to give out compliments like that. And the reason why he's in awe of him is because he's healthy. We don't see cornerbacks with the size, 6'3 to 6'4, and how much he weighs, can play bump and run, can guard the best receiver on the field, and is also excellent off the field. Great hands catching the football. So he's a special, special football player.
And keep in mind who Malik Jackson has played with. Where was he before Jacksonville?
Denver.
He was in Denver with Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, with Von Miller, like some great, great defensive players on a great defense there and in Jacksonville. I buy it. This is why Jalen Ramsey profiled out of Florida State as one of the best corners since the greatest corner out of Florida State, Deion Sanders. Mm.
The run-pass option was a big part of the Eagles and the Jags' success last season. Some players aren't expecting it to stick. Ravens safety Eric Weddle says the RPO is a fad and he'll be out of the league in 5 years. CC, do you agree with that prediction?
No. Eric Weddle, he's going to be out the league, so he's not going to be studying it.
Ooh.
I mean, like, I know he's a good football player and everything.
5 years, I mean,
he's going to be out.
He's hung on a long time.
I mean, no. He's got the really long, nice beard and everything. But, no, I thought the Wildcat. Yeah, like, this is just a different version of, like, the Wildcat. How are you going to attack defenses? So it might not be a version of this, but there will be a wrinkle. But this one has more potential than the Wildcat because now the run-pass option – they're throwing the ball most of the time.
Well, but also, last year it became very in vogue amongst certain announcing crews to call very traditional football plays, almost anything that involved a play action. Oh, that's an RPO. Oh, that's an RPO. And when it wasn't.
Yeah, but the RPO police is here. Chris Carter, I watched games with Nick. I was like, Nick, they fabricating that.
Right. So I think it will. When you have quarterbacks, especially a breed of athletic quarterbacks like Carson Wentz, that can execute it at a high level, it is here to stay to a degree. Maybe not to the degree it was this past season.
Also, Nick, the ability to build a freeze linebackers, and that's what that play fake does, which creates more space for passing lanes. I believe that is hard to be able to take out of the game when you can freeze a defense like that.
All right, the NBA Christmas schedule has been set. Some of the highlights include the Sixers taking on the Celtics, OKC takes on Houston, and the Lakers will head up to the Bay Area to take on the defending champion Warriors. Now, Nick, which game are you most excited about?
Well, there is the Carmelo Anthony revenge game in there, which is intriguing. LeBron getting take on the Warriors is intriguing, but I believe it's Sixers-Celtics. I think these are the two best teams in the East. I know the Sixers just once again got more bad injury news with the rookie Zaire Smith probably being out for the season with a Jones fracture, but the whole world seems to think the Celtics are the best team in the East. I think the Sixers are the best team in the East, and they're clearly, along with Toronto, the two best teams in the East, so that's the matchup I'm most looking forward to.
Great matchup on Christmas, especially these two stellar franchises. Every game they play this year will mean something.
Yes.
But, man, we got to watch Bron, man, on Christmas, man. You got to watch. Man, is Santa Claus? As he's delivering presents, man, I want to watch LeBron James one more time going against these Warriors with these young Lakers.
And finally, we're going to Carmelo Anthony, who's agreed to a deal with the Houston Rockets. Now, Melo was waived by the Atlanta Hawks last week. So, Nick, with Melo included, how close are the Rockets to the Warriors?
I think that the Rockets got worse this offseason and the Warriors got better. And last year, the Warriors won the series. So, I think the Rockets are the closest of any team in basketball, but they are not incredibly close. I don't think anyone's incredibly close. When the Warriors add Boogie Cousins to their weakest position, the Rockets, I don't think they're worse, by the way, because they added Melo. I think they're worse because they lost Ariza.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is a year older, and it is going to be very difficult for them to get what was critically important last year, the number one seed. So I think they're closer than anybody else, but I think that gap, the gap between 1 and 2 in the NBA is bigger than the gap between 2, and which is Houston, and 7, which might be the Raptors.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of good news coming out of Houston since Chris Paul injured his hamstring. Couldn't play in Game 6, couldn't play in Game 7. This offseason, we have seen the Warriors. Yes, they are better. But Houston, when you sign Melo to the deal and the price you get him at, you got better as a team. Let's not fool ourselves.
Yes.
I mean, when you're paying Melo no money, All right? And the amount of minutes he's going to be able to log. Like, the team got better, but there's still a gap between Houston and Golden State.
And when you say they got better, you mean they're better today than they were on Monday.
Yes.
Not that they're better today than they were last season.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. But I don't, you know, I'm not going to continue just to talk negatively about Carmelo. The Rockets got better. Let's just see how the season and see what the addition actually is.
And one other note that I just kind of nerdy basketball note. One thing that Melo struggled with a bit last year, he struggled with a lot last year, but one of the things in particular with OKC is they like to play a really fast pace. And aside from his ability to make trailing threes, he's not a guy that's ever played at a fast pace. The Rockets were middle of the league last year in pace of play. That should suit his style a little bit more. And because of the loss of Ariza, they do have an opening at the starting forward spot. And Melo, for good or for bad, is not mentally in a place right now where he wants to be coming off the bench, so they won't need to ask him or try to force him to come off the bench because they have an opening at that spot.
All right, folks, we're going to move on to the NFL Hall of Fame ceremony. Randy Moss was inducted into Canton over the weekend, and despite spending less than four seasons in New England, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick made the trip to Ohio to celebrate with Randy. Belichick opened up about his relationship with Randy Moss.
Well, Randy was, Randy was, it was a very special relationship. I think from a, it's just logistically, you just can't have the kind of relationship with everybody. There's just so many players and so many hours in the day. That was one that through a variety of circumstances and probably more the way that Randy came onto the team. And again, other circumstances that were involved there just kind of evolved that way. I don't think any of us necessarily planned it. It just worked out. But I learned a lot from Randy. Randy had a big impact on me as a coach. He taught me the game from a perspective that I had never really seen before or understood before. And so I'll always be grateful to him for that, for doing that.
A little softer side of Belichick. Chris Carter, what's your reaction to that comment?
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that Bill learned from him because I've told Nick in conversating with him about Randy and about football, Randy's one of the smartest football players that I've ever played with. And his ability to understand concepts defensively, what they're trying to do, and we've never had anyone in the history of football Randy's size and had Randy's speed and quickness. Like, we've had great speed burners. James Lofton. He's a guy who's 6'3", almost 6'4", run 4'3", world-class speedster in the Hall of Fame. But he didn't have the quickness in a short area that Randy had. He didn't have the deep ball skills that Randy had, because very few times you can see a guy who's a very, very fast guy who can play off the ground. They're very, very fast, but their ground, man, their game is only on the ground. They can't get off the ground, and you don't see speed guys making spectacular, not only one-handed catches, but just have great set of hands. So Randy and that skill set. Randy can get to parts on the football field that Belichick had never seen a player ever get to. Randy can get through defenses and through coverages that we didn't see. Jerry Rice didn't even have the same type of coverages that we saw that the people were putting on Randy Moss. So I think the intellectual property of understanding football, and Belichick alludes to it. He didn't really go into it why it might have been different. We have to understand that Randy, when he came from the Raiders, he had two awful seasons with the Raiders. He had a big-time contract. So New England traded for Randy. Randy took some salary
reduction.
So they had to talk that out. And Belichick had to explain to Randy what type of coach and how the program was going to be. When they traded for Brandon Cook, they didn't have to tell him nothing. He was going to show up to work. You didn't have to worry about him. And Cook knew the pressure was going to be on him to do it. Randy, they wanted to make sure. So there was a lot of conversations, and Randy appreciated that. And you immediately saw Randy change back to having that record-breaking season that they had there in New England.
And, see, you just mentioned he got to places on the football field that Belichick had never seen a guy get to. And you, before the show, mentioned one specific play in particular, and I think we can show it, which is the is this the first touchdown he scored as a Patriot?
Yes.
The one against the New York Jets?
Yeah, they played the Jets the first game of the season, and Randy had dominated the first half. But early in the third quarter, they run a small little play-action fake, which gets a little pull on the backside corner. And Tom Brady, I know, had never thrown a touchdown like this, where Randy Moss gets to a part of the field that no one's going to throw to. He runs through the coverage, which is a zone coverage, just off of a little play fake. He goes from right inside the numbers all the way across outside the other numbers, and that's something Belichick had never seen before.
And so people, at the very beginning of this play, people need to understand, Randy is at the top of the screen. Randy's on the far side of the field and ends up on the near side of the field. And at the end of that play, Belichick said you can't have a special relationship with everyone, basically. He did something that is, by Belichick standards, like for Dick Vermeil, who's a very emotional, I love you guy type of coach, wouldn't have been that rare. But what Belichick did at the end of the play is what was so interesting to you.
He immediately embraced Randy because almost the whole offense met Randy down by the goal line. It was his first touchdown. They realized they had a special player. It wasn't that he had made just a special play there. It was an acknowledgement of his skill, and Randy needed that positive reinforcement. And Belichick looked him in the eye and shook his hand and was like, that's why I went to Oakland to get you. So that bond, it started on the initial phone call with Randy taking the salary reduction that he took, Belichick explaining the program to him, and instant results in week number one there against the Jets.
And the Patriots, that 2007 season was a sea change for Tom Brady's career and for the way the Patriots dominate the NFL. They obviously had won three Super Bowls before that season, but those were defensive-minded teams. This decade, in 2010, so like 2007 season happens, 08 Brady misses with an injury, 2009 Brady's first year back off the injury. So 2010 to now, they've had a top four offense scoring-wise every single year.
Yes.
In the 2000s, they did that, 2000 to 2009, they did that one time other than Randy's, you know, the 2007 season. And what that's what we've seen. They are now a team that beat you offensively. They are now a team that beat you through the air, which is totally different than the pre-Randy Moss era.
And you can't do that unless Belichick basically forgets how he's going to win games. Now, he's going to be best at situational football, but he understands that this new NFL is dominated by quarterbacks, is dominated by offenses. I don't need a great defense, and I don't need great wide receiver personnel. He learned that after Randy left there.
So this, that leads me to my last question on this, which is you were on a plane with Robert Kraft a year and a half ago, and you FaceTime or Robert Kraft FaceTime with Tom Brady, and you talked to him. Brady, tongue in cheek, said, or you said you had just signed with him, and he said, "Good man, I've been wanting a big receiver."
Yes.
We saw what the Patriots did in 07 with a big, great receiver. Why do you think they haven't prioritized a top flight? There's not another Randy Moss to go get. But there were rumors at one point they might trade for Fitzgerald, and they didn't. Why do you think they haven't prioritized that type of playmaker more?
I think that they have found that they can develop players within the salary cap restriction because they don't want to pay a premium for that position. That's the reason why Randy left there. They would not give him the new big contract with Tom Brady. Why he's taking salary less than he should take. Like they have a model of what they're going to do. Now, they develop wide receivers really well. You have to give them credit for that. But small guys, short area quickness, a couple guys outside who do have some speed, but they're not going to attack you deep down the field they did with Randy. Now they attack you deep in the seams. That's the difference in some of the things that they've done. But Belichick's adapting to now being an offensive coach, that right there leads to, man, why he's the greatest football coach that's ever coached in the NFL.
And I guess that makes sense as to why Randy taught him so much out of his own mouth. Softer sided, Bill. I like it. Coming up, you won't believe what Jarvis Landry had to say last night on Hard Knocks. Boy, did he have a word. You'll hear from him next on First Things First. We're back on First Things First. The L.A. Lakers bought in Rajon Rondo this offseason to help mentor fellow point guard Lonzo Ball. Now, some have speculated that Rondo will have an issue not being the starting point guard. Well, TMZ caught up with him and asked him if he'd be okay coming off the bench.
Whatever they ask me, you know, my main objective is to win. I'm ready to help develop Lonzo as much as possible. If I'm not starting, if he's starting, we'll be ready to go. Ready for anybody that comes his way, we'll be ready to go.
Nick, how do you see it working out? What kind of impact do you think Rondo will have on Lonzo?
I think his biggest impact is going to be interpersonal relationships on the team and in practice. I think Rondo is going to go at Lonzo's throat in practice, and I say that in a good way. Rondo is a notorious competitor, whether it is playing Connect Four, which he considers himself the greatest Connect Four player in the world, or whether it's on the basketball court. Now, there are times where he has checked out on teams, but if he is bought in and engaged, we have seen his relentless competitive nature. I think that will be great for Lonzo Ball on the practice court, and I think that's a huge reason they brought in Rajon Rondo. The other place that I think, and people might be surprised to hear me say this, that I think Rondo can be very helpful with Lonzo is the relationship and dealing from Lonzo's side of things with LeBron. We know LeBron can be notoriously passive-aggressive. We also know LeBron holds players to an incredibly high standard, and LeBron does not have a long history in the last decade of playing with young guys. The best example I can think of since he's been a champion or becoming a champion is with Mario Chalmers in the Heat. And Chalmers got it so bad when they went to the White House, President Obama joked about it. Like, it was a running joke how everything was Mario's fault. That can be tough on Lonzo Ball. And we know Lonzo's dad is going to be in his ear saying one thing. Rondo being something of a calming force, saying, listen, man, don't get down on yourself. Here's what you need to do. Those are the ways that I think Rondo can be most helpful to Lonzo Ball, not in the 20 minutes a game or whatever he's that Lonzo gets to rest while Rondo's out on the court.
No, I think it's important that you have veteran players. The LeBron relationship, like, it's real. It's real to play with any superstar. Not only LeBron, like when you are even Kevin Durant, there would be insight in playing with him. Playing with Steph Curry, there would be insight in playing with them. But the two areas that I think he can help him the most is Rondo struggled shooting the basketball. All right? That's a real thing. All right? What type of regimen? What did he do different? How to go about it, that's going to be one thing. And another thing that Rondo is real to him is how to run a basketball team. He knows how to run a basketball team. Lonzo does not know how to run a basketball team. And I'm talking about from which plays to call, feel during the game. So I believe that the minutes that Lonzo's on the court and Rondo is watching, he will be orchestrating, directing him, telling him, based on the Lakers' personnel, what are the best sets for them and at what time of the game. So I believe the time on the court and off the court is very, very important. Shooting the basketball, what regiment do I get into? How do I learn how to do that? What shots should I be taking as a point guard? So I think those, that push-pull there between the veteran Rondo and Lonzo and his lack of experience, I think it's a good fit.
A quick question for you, Nick. You mentioned how fierce a competitor Rondo is. And, yes. And anybody that's watched him has seen that. Absolutely, that's factual. Why is it, though, that you think at, I think, a fairly young age, I mean, he's not an old dude, he's okay coming off the bench and stepping into that more mentor role. And I agree with all y'all. I think he is. But why do you think that works with his competitiveness?
I think that Rondo has played on good teams. And he's played for championships early in his career. Then he went to basketball version of the Siberian Sacramento. And then he was kind of in between. 2 years ago in Chicago, last year in New Orleans. And being able to play with LeBron, being able to play on a one-year deal where maybe he can prove himself and get a bigger deal that I believe he thought he was going to get a bigger offer this offseason after how good he was in the postseason for New Orleans. I think all of that's attractive to him. And while he is saying, listen, I'm okay, he is going to be competing for the starting job. He, I'm sure, wants to be the starting point guard, but he knows who Lonzo is and he knows the team he's on. But we can go back to his time in Chicago. He has, for a guy who's been, this will be his 13th year, he has a good history of embracing the younger guys. When Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler were at odds with the younger players in Chicago, Rondo was the veteran who put his arm around those younger guys. Now, I don't think they'll have that type of veteran, young player dichotomy in L.A., but he isn't an old veteran that's like, ah, I don't need to talk to these young guys. He has a history of doing a good job with that.
Yeah, Rondo's got a lot of basketball left in him, and he's got to deal with LeBron, too. So you just can't say, I'm going to play with the Lakers 1 year. I'm just going to act a fool when you know LeBron. And LeBron's not upset that they didn't trade all these young players for Kawhi with the potential of getting Kawhi. So this is what LeBron has signed up for. And Rondo knows that. So we talk about all these other young players. They got to deal with LeBron. The veteran players got to deal with LeBron, too. And he's hard on them, as we saw with J.R. Smith.
And I want to talk about one other person I think Rondo can help quite a bit. And we had talked about Randy Moss teaching Bill Belichick things. And Belichick, obviously, well, even by the time Randy got there, one of the greatest coaches ever. Rondo can help Luke Walton. Rondo knows as much, if not more, about basketball than Luke Walton. And so that could be a tough situation for the head coach, but I think it could be a beneficial one for the head coach as well. As far as Rondo being able, one of the highest IQ basketball players we have in the league, being able to talk through with Luke Walton what he's seeing on the court, what he's seeing from the young guys, what he's seeing in Lonzo that he went through himself, and all of those things, I think Luke Walton can benefit if they get off on the right foot to Rondo being there as much as Lonzo Ball can. And so I think it's a good fit for those guys all around in that regard.
Absolutely. That's good. I mean, I tend to agree. I mean, I think there's so much drama made around Lonzo's father. Maybe, you know, he's growing up and he has an opportunity to be mentored by some other vets. And he has other voices in his ear other than just his dad.
Yeah, any dad would want that.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we got much more coming up. First things first. Stay with me. The Giants will kick off preseason action against the Browns tomorrow. Number 2 overall pick, Saquon Barkley. Well, he's preparing for his first NFL season. Now, in order to make the adjustment, Barkley says he's been watching film of Adrian Peterson to help him get used to pro-style offense. CeCe, how will Saquon make the adjustment to pro-style offense?
And this is what a lot of players do, not only transition from college to pros. You have what they call training tape, which is typically if a coach is trying to install something, and that being offense or that being a technique. For years in the NFL, we've used video, and athletes are visual learners. So the more pictures you can put in front of them, and then a lot of times as a coach can't demonstrate what typically sometimes they want you to do, but they can get some ridiculous athlete like Adrian Peterson to be able to show you things that are better teaching tools sometimes than words. So they put them in clips, and they get players like Barkley to be able to look at these clips, and you're able to learn and see from what the running back, because the coach might not be able to relate to Barkley what he can do. But Adrian Peterson and what he sees in the hole, what he sees pre-snap, what he sees during the play, Barkley would be able to relate to. So a lot of times, coaches utilize that training tape of players like Peterson to be able to get the point across.
And it's game film, but it's not game film because it's play of just these runs. So you're utilizing the time, you know, most efficiently. And I would caution anybody of making Adrian Peterson comparisons to anybody, even a guy drafted number 2 overall. Mm-hmm. This guy was a stud coming out of high school, dominated the Army game, the yes. All-American game.
Yes.
Dominated that when he declared for Oklahoma. The only thing that stopped him from being the single most dominant player in college football every year at Oklahoma was injury. And he came into the league and instantly dominated the NFL. To me, I think Saquon will adjust fine to the pro style. My question is, how will he adjust to the pro punishment? Because that was never a question with Adrian Peterson. We knew that as long as he stayed healthy, he had weird nagging injuries at OU, that he could take, he was going to be bigger and stronger than even some of the best defensive players. And he showed that. We also knew you could get Adrian Peterson the ball 25 times.
Yes.
Up the middle, off tackle, didn't matter, and he was going to be able to do it. That's the only question I have with Barkley. Is he a 15 carry, 5 catch a game guy, or can he be a 20, 22 carry a game guy? And that's pro style or college style.
Yes, and he's going to have to answer some of the same questions that Adrian Peterson, because coming up to Adrian Peterson, coming out of Oklahoma, we hadn't seen a lot of people from Oklahoma, great running backs. Billy Sims, he had a great career. But besides that, who are the running backs that have gone from Oklahoma in transition? And people say, well, why do people look at that? Yeah, because of the history of the game, you have these dominant universities in Penn State. Barkley is going to have to overcome what pro scouts and pro coaches know. Penn State skilled players, running backs, have not done well in the NFL. If you look at Penn State's great program, you tell me how many skilled guys they have, that being running backs, quarterbacks, defensive backs, wide receivers that are playing in the national football. Not a lot of them. Now, he was tremendous at Penn State, but most of his big plays came through the passing game and came through special teams more so than they came like Adrian Peterson running the ball through the gut of a defense. So there's still some questions. Adrian had some questions. He answered them immediately.
Well, I want to follow up on that, because I've understood when people hold, all right, this coach and this system for quarterbacks, right? He can help you put up great numbers. June Jones, he helped you put up great numbers in college.
Yes.
Don't know if he's going to be a great pro. But why would the history of how Penn State running backs in the 90s did in the pros, because you're telling me it does, like guys have questions about it. Obviously, it didn't hurt his draft stock. But why do you think that is true? Why do you think guys will look at what people did under different regimes and different generations and say, same school, I wonder how successful they'll be?
Well, when you have 20 years, 30 years of history, I mean, absent of Franco Harris, who's been the best in the pro football? Kajana Carter, good friend of mine. Now, he got hurt at Penn State. He drafted there by the Bengals. Didn't have the career. But when you look at it,
Larry Johnson's the one guy recently that had a good couple. I mean, he had a great couple of years. But
they just have not produced. So it's a matter of, I mean, we're a results-oriented business.
Sure.
You don't get orange trees from apple seeds.
Right.
All right? So Ohio State, their next quarterback will be the best quarterback potentially in pro football that they've ever had. They haven't had any. So my school has its own critiques. Other schools have their own critiques, and that is the critique about Penn State. They produce offensive linemen, and they produce linebackers. So until they start producing some of these skilled guys, that's something that I should look at. I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player.
It remains
an
outstanding question.
He's going to have to be able to break through what history shows me not to be true.
CeCe, in addition to the programs, when you are looking to evaluate a player's ability to make that transition from collegiate football to pro football, what else are you evaluating?
Well, can he adapt to being in New York City? Now, he seems to be a pretty humble kid. He likes working out, so he's in love with the game. There's a lot of grittiness about the NFL that's not videotaped. Are you in love with that part, the thing that makes Tom Brady great? So there's other little intangibles about loving the game and being in the limelight that they help. You know, if you like those things, it's easier to have a great career.
I'm going to talk about one tangible that I want to pick your brain on real quick before we move on. When we watched him play against Ohio State in Columbus, before the game even started, if you had never watched Penn State play, watching them warm up, you knew who their best player was. It was the guy who was in the best shape. It was the guy who looked like the best player. The guy, he was just clearly, visually, from 30 yards away, standing in the back of the end zone. Oh, he's the best athlete out there. That will not be the case in the NFL. He's still as good of an athlete as he was before, maybe even better. But he is now going to be going up against a caliber of athlete he never has. I get that. That's everybody that goes college to pro. But a guy who was, how much more difficult is the transition for a guy? I don't want to say he relied overly on his athleticism. He's a running back. But he was always the best athlete on the field. And now that will not be the case.
I disagree with you, because he's a better athlete than Odell Beckham. size, power, strength. Now, Odell's a ridiculous athlete. Now, when he and the Giants, when they're in the huddle, Barkley is the best athlete. Now, does that athleticism transfer over to being a great football player? Odell's a great athlete who is a great football player. Does it transfer over? Because, no, if you look at his powerlifting, he's got powerlifting records. Man, he's a blazer in the 40-yard dash, short area quickness, vertical leap, broad jump, all these things. No, I mean, unless he's on the field with Jalen Ramsey or someone, no. This kid, when he steps on the NFL field, a lot like when he was at Penn State and in high school, he will be the best athlete on the field. Will it transfer over? Ezekiel Elliott in Dallas, it transfers over. Right. Zeke is a freak athlete. So we'll see with Barkley, and I believe that it will transfer over.
Awesome. Coming up, guys, Aaron Rodgers is ripping his teammates. We're going to talk about why next here on First Things First. Moving on now to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers trying to bounce back from a disappointing season where he only got 7 games due to that collarbone injury. Now, at the end of yesterday's practice, he was not happy with the effort he saw from some of his young wideouts. Take a listen.
It was one of the worst carded sessions we've had. I don't know how you can make it any simpler. You literally have what the play would be in our terminology on the card. And the effort level is very low, especially what I'm accustomed to. Haven't run that period for a number of years, so it's not a good start for us on the carded period for the young guys. You know, I think Yancey has really progressed. Gmo, obviously 16, but everybody else was kind of piss poor.
Chris Carter.
I mean, he named the guys who did well, which is essentially calling out by name everybody else.
Out by omission. Chris Carter, when Aaron Rodgers says this, what kind of impact does it have on the teammates?
Man, I try to tell guys, man, sometimes you have to listen real careful. And when they don't call your name, it ain't for you to be worried about. All right? Because you know the tempo. Aaron and how they've done things in Green Bay. People have criticized them because they haven't participated a lot in free agency. The reason why, because a lot of the players are born. They either get them free agents or they draft them, but they groom them. People like Donald Driver, Jordy Nelson, they groom them. Then Greg Jennings, they groom them as they come up the roster. So a lot of that is developed in practice. And Aaron's the best example. When Brett Favre was starting, Aaron was lighting him up. Aaron was acting like he was playing in games in practice. So if this was some other quarterback, I would say, he's just trying to maybe show off, maybe kind of wield his power a little bit. But no, Aaron started on that scout team, and they have a reputation of getting better as far as the quarterbacks and wide receivers. So it's not only what he's saying to the wide receivers, but he's also – there's a reason why Aaron is getting throws on the scout team. What's Deshaun Kizer doing? The guy who they traded from Green Bay. He's supposed to be getting those reps. Why is Aaron Rodgers? So it's not only the wide receivers, it's also the quarterbacks. Because he said, I used to run these drills.
And I think people need to understand, because I think that most fans probably don't, that it's running a scout team for the skill position guys, it's different than in a regular practice. Like, when he says it couldn't be easier, like your assignment's drawn on a card, they show you the card in the huddle, and they were still running the wrong routes, which was some of his frustration. But I think the other part of his frustration that might have bled out here was, I mean, you mentioned a name, Jordy Nelson. Aaron Rodgers was not happy this offseason with a few of the moves the Packers made, whether it be the quarterback's coach not being there or Jordy Nelson not being retained, either of those guys not being retained. And so now instead of having Jordy Nelson, not that Jordy be on the scout team per se, but Jamon Moore, he wasn't one of the guys listed as he's progressing well. That's the guy they spent a mid-round draft pick on this year, or Equanimeous St. Brown, another guy they spent a draft pick on this year. There are three guys, wide receivers, they drafted this year, which is one of the reasons they felt they could let Jordy go. None of those three guys were the guys he named, right? So, like, he named the guys he thought were doing well. All three rookies were left out of that. I think that's got at least something to do with this as well.
Yeah, I don't necessarily – I'm not going to do that because I know Aaron's getting ready for the season and he can only work with the receivers. Aaron can be a little petty, But when you're in the moment, you're at training camp, I believe he addressed what was going on compared to stuff that happened this offseason. I believe that if the Packers are going to be successful, it's not going to be because he's thinking about not having Jordy Nelson and other receivers on the roster.
CeCe, I know everybody is motivated differently, particularly in this game. But when Aaron Rodgers says that your quarterback calls you out by omission, does that motivate most guys, do you think?
Well, the thing that's different about the NFL than any other pro sports, it's paramount to be good at practice. And the reason why we try to teach that, because you only play a handful of games. And if you're not good in practice, you're not going to make it to the game. There's very few NFL players do we hear, you know something? He was not a good practice player, because practice is 90 to 95% of what you're going to do. You might hear that as a baseball. You might hear that in hockey. You hear it all the time in the NBA. Like, a guy's only a gamer. No, if a guy's not a gamer, he ain't going to get in the games in the NFL. So the way you approach practice is totally different than these other sports who have basically glorified walkthroughs as practice.
How can any of these young players, when Aaron Rodgers says the effort was bad, not the execution, not drops, the effort was bad. Mm-hmm. None of these young guys, because the Packers right now have a glut of wide receivers. They drafted three. They have some college free agents. They have some guys that back from last year that are on the roster bubble. How can any of those guys in your mind, like when you would see a guy who you knew was not a lock to make the team early in training camp, just going through the motions, what's going through your mind? Like, how can that happen?
Well, first of all, there's no guy going through a scout team in training camp and he's just going through the motions. All right? They just had bad days.
Okay.
There are days, man, you are gas. There is no one on the football field that runs more than wide receivers. So the reason why Aaron was upset was because the reason why you should have a great effort is because you know where you're going. Now, you might not know the coverage, and he's not giving Green Bay's defense credit for actually getting guys, not letting guys getting off the ball, rerouting them. So Green Bay's defense must have been doing a good job. But the reason why they should be able to go fast is because you know where you're going exactly. Typically, the reason why younger players aren't going fast is because they don't know where they're going. They don't know their assignment. So typically, when you know your assignment, there's a certain amount of intensity that will follow knowing your assignment.
All right, guys, coming up, what can Deshaun Watson do to pick up where he left off last season? We'll talk about it on First Things First. Christmas Day schedule has been set. Some of the highlights: the Sixers will take on the Celtics, the Thunder will play Houston, and the Lakers will head to the Bay Area to take on the defending champs, the Warriors. So, Nick, which game are you most excited about?
The game that I think will be the most important, the game that could determine potentially, because every game between these two teams could determine the one seed in the East, Sixers-Celtics. I think that will be an incredibly competitive race. Mm-hmm. I think both teams will win somewhere in the mid-50s, and yes, tiebreakers could matter, head-to-head record could matter. So that's the one that I'm most excited to watch. Ben Simmons taking on Kyrie, Joel Embiid against the great frontline players of Boston. That's the one.
Every time they play Celtics and Sixers, it's going to be a big game. As you mentioned, both of these teams will win over 50 games, vying for home court advantage. But, man, it's Christmas. Man, it's time to see not Santa, but the King. Anytime LeBron plays against the Warriors, until he retires, or at the Warriors, unless there's some other team, it will be an important game. Christmas Day, let's get the gifts out. Bron.
Fourth straight year we get LeBron versus Warriors on Christmas.
Going now to football. The run pass option was a big part of the Eagles and the Jags' success last season, but some players aren't expecting it to stick. Ravens safety Eric Weddle says the RPO is a fad and it'll be out of the league in 5 years. CeCe, you agree?
No, I don't agree, because the reason why it was good last year, because look at the quarterbacks. We talk about Philadelphia. When was it most effective? Nick Foles, quarterbacks that were struggling. Jacksonville, a quarterback that struggled. So anytime you can help out quarterbacks that are going to struggle, you can use the RPOs. But the ability for the RPO to be able to freeze the linebackers, when you watch that play fake, because it is real, they could be running the football, and that freeze right there, The defenses don't know what to do, so offenses will continue to attack that that position.
Listen, I think anything like – it's not going to go the way of the Wildcat, which went extinct. Mm-hmm. But it will not be – I think anything that is super effective 1 year, defenses adjust, and you will see offenses use it slightly less the following year. So I don't fully agree with Eric Weddle, but I understand his point, which is it seemed like every football game I turned on, the announcing crew was, there's an RPO, there's an RPO. Now, some of that was just – I think misdiagnosing the play, calling things an RPO that weren't. But I don't think it will be used at the same frequency
Nick's
that
being
it was.
Nice, Ebony. They were just flat lying last year sometime. We would watch a game. Guy be like, that's an RPO. I'd like, Nick, nah.
You'll call him out, though, right?
Yeah, because the TV police is here. Chris Carter calling games.
All right, finally, the Jaguars defensive tackle, Malik Jackson. He says the Jaguar players are, quote, in awe of all-pro corner Jalen Ramsey. Strong words. CC, can the Jags pick up where they left off last year and challenge the Patriots in the AFC?
Absolutely. I expect them to be. I think they're a top five team. We haven't gotten down to who we think is going to be in the Super Bowl. AFC, NFC made those picks yet. But preliminary, the Jaguars, they will be in my top five. The reason why Malik Jackson would say something like this is because in the 2 years that they've seen Jalen Ramsey, they've seen an injured, a guy who couldn't practice, a guy who was recovering from surgery, couldn't spend time on the practice field in the offseason. But this offseason, there's been nothing but continuity. He trained with his father all offseason, didn't have any setbacks, didn't have any procedures done. So what he's seen is 100% Jalen Ramsey. Bump and run, one of the best that we've seen. He's also great off the ball. Ball skills, second to none in the league. So now you're seeing a bigger, stronger, a not injured Jalen Ramsey. I can understand why they're seeing that. I think we're going to see the best football out of Jalen Ramsey, and he has the potential to be the best corner in 2018 in the NFL.
I have nothing but faith in Jalen Ramsey. I am more skeptical of the Jags than my partner for a few reasons. And now, I hope I'm wrong about this because that's the style of football I like to watch. I like to watch teams that try to beat you defensively and running the football just because it's gone, the league's gone so far in the other direction. Mm-hmm. I like to see teams that switch it up and just try to, listen, we get 14 points, we're going to win because we're holding you to 10. I enjoy watching that. But we know a couple things. One is that it is much harder for a top five defense to duplicate that year over year than a top five offense. Typically, year after year, the top five offenses are about the same teams, three or four of the same teams. Mm-hmm. The defenses can change. And the other thing, and this has to go into people's analysis of the Jags going into next year, and I think it was forgotten. Defensively, they were historically healthy last year. Take their 11 starters, mm-hmm. plus their nickel corner. That's 12 guys, 16 games to play in the season, 12 times 16, so we're at 192 games. They lost 4 games due to injury. Of those 12 starting players, essentially, there were 4 games missed due to injury. Now, I don't wish injury on anybody, but that is, there's some good luck involved in that. So, while they have...
But they did have players on offense miss some time.
Absolutely, but yes. They think their offense was the replacement level part of their team, right? Their defense is how they won their game. So, I don't know if they're going to be able to duplicate the health. And I know how hard it is to duplicate going number one defense to number one defense. I'd love to see it happen, though. And Jalen Ramsey, I think, could be defensive player of the year. I think he could be the best defensive player in the whole sport this year.
Now, when we see teams like Jacksonville who do run the ball and they feel like they're challenged by their quarterback, but when they have a historic defense, we see this happen over a 3 to 5 year period. We don't see these defenses like the New York Football Giants, who had a good defense on paper. They played one good year together. Now, they weren't like Jacksonville, built like Jacksonville, and that defense fell apart. But when we see teams like Seattle, what they did together, sure. That's the type of talent that Jacksonville has. And the deodorant for all these things is a running game. If they can continue to run the ball where that defense is not going to play a lot of snaps, I look for them to be successful. Last year in the playoffs against Pittsburgh and against New England, that defense was not great. I look for them to bounce back this season.
All right, fellas. Speaking of the AFC, we're going to stick to it. But we're talking about the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson set the league on fire in the early part of last season, throwing 19 TD passes in 7 games. But the Pro Football Focus ranked him as 20th best quarterback overall in the league. Oh, CeCe, how does Watson avoid a sophomore slump?
Now, I know a lot of people are probably surprised by Pro Football's focus ranking of him, but I met with them this summer, spent some time with them, studying the NFL, getting ready to call games, and they do a tremendous job. Now, they are projecting for him to have a slump based on what they've seen and what they think about their offensive line. So, you know, for me is it's hard to continue playing at that level. He's a tremendous football player. I look for him to come back just a little bit from a touchdown to interception ratio.
Okay.
You know,
yes.
Can he continue to throw the ball down the field the way they did? Now, if he can, because the reason why I don't think he can duplicate the long ball is because the offensive line. To throw the long ball, you need time. Or to throw the long ball, you need a running game. So I want them to be better running the football. That would help prevent a sophomore slump. And it's hard to duplicate. It's like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen were the best in the NFL last year in contested balls with Case Keenum. Now, does that transfer over in 2018 to the new quarterback? It's hard to transfer over being as good as they were, good as they were at contested passes. So I think Houston, I think they will be able to throw the ball, but to be able to throw it deep and effectively the way they did, that part right there, I believe there's a correction there.
Listen, he's going to have a regression. There is no – the last four games he played, his quarterback ratings were 125, 120, 104, 107. That's absurd. That's the best month of Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? That is not – that's not a good rookie month. That's a great month for a Hall of Famer at the peak of his power. So he's going to have something of a regression. The question is, how far will it swing? Will it swing from it where he was A triple plus to B plus or A triple plus to C minus? Like, that's the concern. And I think a lot of that will be out of his control. Offensive line is a huge concern. I'm going to talk about the head coach for a moment because Bill O'Brien was brought to Houston to be a quarterback's guru. Now, he didn't have a quarterback that anyone could guru with prior to Deshaun. But where he
had. But these things happen when you cross the path of a great player. We have seen it. Great players change your resume more than anything else. Brett Favre. I coach Brett Favre. Oh, okay, John Gruden. Okay, let's go Andy Reid.
How about every defensive coordinator Ray Lewis ever played for became a head coach?
Oh, my goodness.
Every single one.
Yes.
And similar story with offensive coordinators and Tom Brady, whether it's Charlie Weiss, Josh McDaniels, Bill O'Brien. Like, you can go down the list. And so we don't know. I can't give Bill O'Brien the quarterback guru credit yet. But I do know from covering the team living there and watching them last year, where Bill O'Brien has struggled since day one is the things coaches have total control over. Game management, clock management, situational football. A lot of Deshaun Watson is going to be evaluated by wins and losses, and a lot of that is Bill O'Brien going to understand end of half, end of game situations. They blew a game last year against New England when Deshaun played because the coach bungled the end of the game. And so that's not in his control. And the running game. Because when you've got a guy as fast as Will Fuller and a guy as skilled as DeAndre Hopkins, if you have even a hint of a play-action threat with a quarterback as agile and as athletic as Deshaun Watson, that is so hard to beat. But if Lamar Miller and the running game are not anything of a threat, and if you can play them the opposite the way that people are going to play the Cowboys, you can play a zone coverage, you can play soft, then he's going to have to fit into tight windows. Then he's going to have to make a lot of pro throws that he doesn't have experience making. Those are the things that are, to me, going to determine how big the regression is.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien's got to create some easy throws for him. We know Deshaun's going to make a lot of spectacular plays. Their wide receiving core, I believe, is a little underrated. But how easy can Bill O'Brien make the game for Deshaun? I think that is what tells us how successful he is in the second season. And to me, forget what the QBR is. Forget what yards per attempt, touchdown, interception ratio. I'm going to be measuring him by wins. If he can get his team off the field winning games, if he can get them the double-digit wins, I'm willing to come back some on the numbers if he can be the type of leader that I expect him to be.
And I'm going to, for him, because I think it's noteworthy, I'm going to touch on the third rail for a moment, which is He has an owner that continues to step in it with his public comments. And we have seen some of the things Dak has had to deal with as a black starting quarterback when an owner's been outspoken on some of the racial politics, some of the anthem stuff. I do not put it past Bob McNair to say something that makes his job harder, because people will always go to the quarterback and there will always be an extra scrutiny on the black starting quarterback. We're talking about kneeling, the anthem, things like that.
Of course.
And so he didn't have to deal with that at all last year, just like JJ kind of got. JJ was injured, so JJ didn't have to talk about any of the things Bob McNair was saying. He got to be kind of sit that one out. All of that thing are things that could contribute to what was a total celebration of Deshaun Watson last year, a little more scrutiny on him this year.
Something I learned from Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham said, people are adjusting to me because I'm a black quarterback. He said, but Chris, I'm used to being a black quarterback. That's all I've been. So if Deshaun continues doing exactly what he did for Dabo Sweeney at Clemson from a leadership standpoint, if he continues to make the type of stance on and off the field that he's done since he's been with the Titans in a short period of time, I believe that he'll be okay, because he has shown himself to not be a good leader, but to be a great leader.
Absolutely. He is certainly not new to that. Coming up, how will Rajon Rondo impact Lonzo Ball's sophomore season? That's next on First Things First. Browns kick off preseason action tomorrow. Baker Mayfield likely to make his NFL debut. Now, the number one overall pick and former Heisman Trophy winner says this. The game has, quote, slowed down exponentially since rookie camp. CeCe, how big of an adjustment will the speed of the game be for Baker Mayfield in the NFL?
Well, it's an adjustment for all of us. It's not as if it's foreign. It's not like your one guy comes in and says, you know, the league gets it done. Even Ezekiel Elliott, a guy came from Ohio State, recent, had success. Todd Gurley, very, very successful. The speed of the game was still faster than they've ever seen. Now, there are some guys, because of the way they play, they are able to adapt to it quickly. Running backs are the best example, because vision and the skill sets that you need to run the football, you need them at all levels to be able to run. So what they've seen is very, very familiar, even though people are moving faster. And what Baker's telling you is the information, too, that he's getting, it's not the first time that he's getting that information. Because we have to go back to some of the things that NFL teams and even the New England Patriots, they were intrigued with Baker Mayfield. They were behind the scenes trying to trade for Baker Mayfield. But the important information that I took from it was the Cleveland Browns left interviewing Baker Mayfield, and they thought he had a photographic memory. So the things that he saw in minicamp, the same things he saw in the OTAs, now he's seeing them again for the second, third, and fourth time. Of course, his reaction time is going to be different. Seeing the speed of NFL linebackers, defensive linemen, defensive backs, how much space they can cover, cover three, cover two, all those things, he sees that. And also, he sees the speed of his players that he has on offense to be faster. So, absolutely, I believe this to be true. I don't think he's just saying that to say the right thing. Right. The game should have slowed down for him. And if what the Browns said as far as his photographic memory, if that part is accurate, which I do believe it is, then the game should be slowing down. And it will slow down even more from right now to the first game of the season after getting four games under his belt in the preseason.
This is my single biggest concern about Baker's rookie season. And it more so than the other quarterbacks drafted in the first round, outside of Lamar Jackson, who was the last pick of the first round, and he has some positives and negatives that are kind of unique to him. But Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, your four quarterbacks taking the top half of the first round. Only one of these guys made some of their money in college football running around. Now, Baker won the Heisman based on his throwing stats, based on his prolific, all-time great quarterback, college quarterback pass rating. I get that. But escapability, escaping pressure, running outside of the pocket, and sometimes running for first downs was a bigger part of his game than Rosen, Darnold, or Josh Allen. And sometimes when we talk about the speed of the game, it's the windows, how fast they close. It's about throws. But sometimes the speed of the game is, I think I can go get that first down with my legs, oh, my God, that D end is way faster than anyone Texas Tech ever had, than anyone University of Texas ever had. And so that part of me is always a concern whenever there's a quarterback that I saw. It's a concern for Deshaun Watson in Houston. Any quarterback that made some of their money running the football.
And, Nick, you're making a great point because that's the only thing in the NFL in practices that's not live. That's the only thing. Because I can guarantee you, he's got a guy that plays in, Myles Garrett, there for the Cleveland Browns, that he wouldn't see the closing speed because Myles is not allowed to do that because of that colored jersey that they have on. But in the game, it is, man, it's shocking sometimes of how close guys get to you, especially when they finishing on a quarterback, because you're not able to do that. You're not able to practice that. So, Nick, you're making a great point that, man, yeah, he's going to see coverages. Yeah, there's going to be a little bit of difference in game speed. But what he sees from a defensive lineman standpoint and linebackers blitzing and closing on him, and if he decides to run with the football.
And for people who watched Hard Knocks last night, I know the Jarvis Landry thing stole the show, and we're actually going to be able to play some of that for you later in the show. But there was one moment where a quarterback got hit. And it was Myles Garrett, and it was Baker Mayfield, and it was in a situation where there was a fumble. And so Myles was trying to dive on the fumble. Baker was trying to get on the fumble. And you heard the GM, John Dorsey, yell from the sideline, "Don't hit the quarterback!" And Myles came to the sideline, I think said to his teammates, "I was trying not to hit him." But, like, they are the protected species out there, and they should be. Like, we know how valuable these guys are. And that part is always the concern to me. Now, what he will be able to learn is, I thought I could fit it in that window. Oh, man. That corner, Denzel Ward. Now, I know he's a rookie as well, so he played against a guy like that in college, but not that many guys like that in college. Oh, he can go close that window quicker than guys I'm used to.
And sometimes it's just not in the beginning of the season. If you take a look at RG3, the thing that altered his career, it wasn't early because he had a very successful rookie season. But late in that season, he ran into a guy named Haloti Ngata,
who doesn't look like he should be fast.
And you would have never thought that he ever experienced to get hit by a defensive lineman. But Haloti caught him on the sideline. So based from his defensive line stance, Haloti Ngata ran probably around 30 yards to get to RG3. And that one hit that shattered his knee, all right, that changed RG3's career. So Nick's making a great point as far as the speed and, man, those defensive linemen getting to you, and eventually you're not going to figure it out until one of them hits you in the game.
Certainly. No, this is an observation of Baker. He seems like a very self-aware guy, because I feel like a lot of the points y'all are making is about the self-awareness of some of these individuals to understand what some of the limitations may be when they make this transition from college to pro, right? He strikes me as a young man who has had a mental toughness that we normally don't see just because of the kind of underdog status he's enjoyed his entire career, this whole transition. So it just seems like he will be more self-aware and not overestimate his ability to do what you're talking about, Nick.
I think that is true. I also think the flip side of that is one of the reasons he went number one, one of the reasons he struck Chris in a five-minute conversation and a handshake in Ohio State, Oklahoma, one of the reasons he struck Hugh Jackson, is he has, even by NFL standards, even by quarterback standards, a self-confidence that is almost unlike anyone. I don't want to say anyone else, but that is rare for anybody in the NFL or in any walk of life. And sometimes that self-confidence gets you in trouble. Sometimes that self-confidence can be like, I can still do this. And so the RG3 example is a great one because he rolled the dice and kept hitting sevens. And finally, he rolled the dice one time, got snake eyes, and it, like you said, altered his career. And RG3 isn't Baker. RG3 was sleight of frame. RG3 was a 4-3 guy. I get all of that. But it's just you are eventually going to run into a guy who is going to catch you. And so that is why we hear guys say all the time, you got to be able to play from the pocket, got to be able to make plays downfield with your arm. He can do all of that. It's in a weird way, I'm less worried about Sam Darnold on this stuff because Darnold's not going to be trying that type of stuff. And because he doesn't have the athletic ability to do it. While Baker was the smallest of any of the first-round quarterbacks, he graded out as the best athlete of all of them except for Lamar. Like, he was the best athlete except for Lamar, and I wonder how much that's going to potentially work against him early on.
Yeah, there's a lot of things when you're a number one pick that working against you, but the reason why I believe Baker will have the most successful career of all the quarterbacks that were drafted in the first round is because he has a huge advantage starting out. He does not have the pressure that a normal number one player would have because he doesn't have to play week number one necessarily. Sure. Now, Sam Darnold, he's in New York City. He was drafted. I believe there's more pressure on Sam Darnold to be able to play than Baker Mayfield. And I believe that Baker Mayfield has the best group of skilled guys, if healthy, right now in his first year. All right? Because I don't know what Josh Rosen. If Josh Rosen gets in there with Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, now they could be special. But I don't know when Josh is going to play. But for Baker,
it's certainly better than the Jets. Certainly better than the Bills. I think better than the Ravens as well. Like, there's no – I mean, Jarvis is turning some heads. And what Baker also has is the best quarterback ahead of him.
Yes.
Tyrod Taylor. And a guy that if people watch Hard Knocks or listen to you, Hugh Jackson, that staff, they really like Tyrod. And they are – and they're not going to feel the pressure or the need – to insert Baker day one.
And if you give me all five quarterbacks and you give me all five of the quarterback coaches or coordinators coaching them, I'm putting my money on Todd Haley to get the wine from the grape. Not grape juice. I'm talking about wine. And that's what I expect Todd. And that's the advantage that Baker has over those other quarterbacks. And those other quarterbacks, they're in good situations. I believe that Baker is in a great situation.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.